Welcome to the Self-Love Bootcamp, Banish Shame, Doubt, and Fear, and Build the Life You've Only Dreamt About. I'm Laura Biswas, co-founder of the Love Mandala and creator of the Self-Love Bootcamp Summit. And today we have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Erica Goodstone. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here.
We are really thrilled to have you on the summit. Stephanie and I are both really big fans of your work and really thankful to be exposed to what you're doing and all the help you're bringing to people. And so we really wanted to highlight you on the summit and give people a chance to hear all the wisdom that you have. Maybe what makes sense is for me to go ahead and share your background first, and then we can dig in and talk together.
Okay, great.
So just for all of our community, Dr. Erica Goodstone is a love mentor and relationship healer, helping men, women, individuals, and couples, gay and straight, heal their relationships through love. She is a licensed mental health counselor, licensed marriage therapist, board-certified sex therapist, licensed massage therapist, certified body-oriented psychotherapist, and personal life and health and wellness coach. That's a mouthful, and that's a lot of credentials. former professor of health and physical education for over two decades, Dr. Erica taught about stress management, holistic health, wellness, physical fitness, yoga, diet, meditation, and the mind-body-spirit connection decades before health awareness became more mainstream. She helps her clients reawaken their sense of self-worth, passion for life, and receptivity to love. Feeling accepted, appreciated, and acknowledged for their own unique and special gifts, Dr. Erica's clients reach out to their partners and potential partners with a renewed ability to love and be loved. She has a plethora of great work and books and all kinds of offerings on her website, DrErikaGoodstone.com, where you can reach her as well. And I think we'll just dive in and start hearing more directly from her. I thought, Dr. Erica, we'd start. I would love to know, how did life lead you to this point where you began to teach about love and relationships? Because usually somebody's path brings us to that this kind of work where you have such passion, you know, that you can see in what you do.
I have to say that it started when I was, I mean, it may have started way before that, but the point that I sort of took off was during my doctoral program. My advisor at the time had just gone back for another degree in social work, and he discovered this psychologist, Dr. Margaret Mahler, who had studied mothers and infants in the first 3 years of life, the bonding between the mother and the infant. And he told me about this theory, and he was talking about what happens when the bonding doesn't go well. The child developed separation anxiety, intense ambivalence, and anxiety about merger and, you know, feeling too lost when involved with another person, like they lose themselves. So I did my dissertation on that, on romantic love relationships for adults and those qualities. And at the time, I had all of it. I had the separation anxiety, the ambivalence, you know, and the fear of marriage and closeness. So it was perfect for me at that time. And that was like the beginning of my study into this area. But while I was in the doctoral program, I was teaching health and physical education, and I was always having injuries, not severe injuries, but muscle aches and pains. So I went for a lot of body therapy sessions. And toward the end of my doctoral program, right before the dissertation, I saw my future teacher and mentor, Alana Rubenfeld, at a conference where she worked with someone who was on a massage table, a whole group of us around watching. And this person had pneumonia. And after Alana asked her all kinds of questions about her family, she started to say, "Get off my chest," to her husband and her mother and anyone else who was bothering her. And she started coughing, and it became so obvious that the pneumonia was related to her feeling suppressed by these other people. And so I found my life's work, that's the kind of work that I do, which is a type of touch therapy. And because I touch people and I do counseling, I went to get a massage license. But I don't do regular massage. I do counseling with the touch therapy. And there's one gene that can only be turned on through touch. So touch is a powerful aspect of love and relationships, and it helps with healing. So that was the beginning. And then it's been, I studied spirituality. I did a lot of yoga and meditation retreats. So I've combined a lot of knowledge and understanding and wisdom from over the years.
Yeah, wow. What a beautiful story. I can really relate to what you're describing from a couple of angles. I have three daughters, and my youngest one is adopted, and so we had some real profound work that we had to do bonding when she came to us. She was only a week old, but she and I had difficulty
wow.
bonding, and we got help with that. And, you know, she has some anxiety we're always kind of working with, and I think, you know, I can see the roots of that, that was such a big change as an infant to go from one family to another. And at the time, nobody was paying attention to the baby, you know.
1 week old, you would think that it would be easy. But a lot happens while the infant is in the mother's womb that you don't know about.
Yeah, and
chemicals
flowing
in the mother's body.
Absolutely. And she was, while the birth mother was pregnant, there was a lot of stress. And so we have a great relationship with the birth family. So, you know, we've all been supporting this process. But it's very interesting to watch, you know, watch that and know that it's a powerful impact, you know, for everyone. And so I can really appreciate that. And, you know, in my own life,
I wanted to say something. And we all do not realize the impact of all of that. You know, it just happened years
right.
ago. We don't realize it has any effect, but it does. Very often it does.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I've also experienced in my own life some of the impact of, you know, the psychological experiences of trauma on the body. I had when I was about 40, I just started remembering that I'd been abused as a child sexually, and I'd never spoken about it. And believe it or not, I had thyroid cancer and had to go through that process to have my thyroid removed and recover from that. And I'm completely in knowing that that was related, you know, that that was a manifestation of this difficult experience I'd had. And I was very fortunate to get the help, you know, and be healthy now. But boy, I'm a huge believer that the mind-body connection and, you know, our health and wellness is very closely tied to our experience. So I can really appreciate your story.
Thank you. It's really huge. And we don't all pay attention to our body in a society emphasizes a quick fix to take a pill, get surgery, even radiation and chemotherapy. It's all just to fix the problem, but it's the current problem, the current symptom, but it doesn't get to what's the cause and what's the underlying emotional quality connected to that.
Right, and really shifting that. Yeah, exactly. It's really profound work you're talking about. Maybe you mm-hmm. We could switch gears and you could tell us a little bit about how you teach about, you know, the keys to creating love in life. Because I know, you know, people are here on the summit because they're looking to have more love in their life, whether, you know, and I think we're both believers that self-love is a foundation of that. But I would love to hear how you teach people what those keys are to creating love.
Well, I love talking about this, but I do have a report, even though there's a free report for this event, I have some on my website. And one of them is 9 secrets to creating successful love and wonderful relationships. The first aspect, just like this whole summit, is about knowing yourself and loving and accepting yourself and having that self-confidence, just knowing who you are, that who you are is a gift to the world. It's a gift to other people. And sharing yourself is that gift. But that's only the first piece of creating love and loving relationships. That once you know yourself, then you will also need to focus on knowing other people, knowing who they are, not making those assumptions that, oh, I wish this person was like that, or he's a successful businessman, so he's like that. You really don't know what he's like until you really find out. you don't know about that childhood stuff. And the business image might be covering something up. So really get to know who another person is. And you find out by asking questions, by observing, seeing their body language. There's a lot of ways to find out. Then the next part is to really understand and accept and learn from your past, like you just said you did. And it doesn't matter when you start doing that, but to really look back at your past. I've had many clients come for counseling, and when I'm taking their history, they say, what do I need this for? You know, it was 40 years ago. Well, I find particularly men that might be 60 or 65, and maybe they're retired, or maybe they're thinking about retiring, and they don't have as much money as they had before. Their sex drive isn't as strong. Well, those childhood issues that they had, the fear or shame or whatever they had, can suddenly reemerge because they don't have the escapes. They can't just easily cheat. They can't easily buy their way out of it. So the sooner that you understand and learn from your past, the healthier and more wonderful life you can have. So that's important. And then the next one is to know what you really want, to really follow your dreams, your passions, know what you want from your life so that you might be really attracted to a guy who's sexy and appealing, but only for the moment. He may not have the dreams, and he may not have the desire to create a lifestyle that you're dreaming about. So if you stay with this person just because right now you have this passion, it can be very disappointing in a very short period of time. So follow your dreams and allow yourself to do that. So that's just the first four parts. Then there's all the stuff to understand, like learn about love, what it is, what it takes to love, what blocks love, what gets in the way, what interferes with love. And, of course, it's always loving yourself first. Another one is understanding touch. Like, we don't talk about touch too much, but there are many ways to touch. And you touch people with words, you touch them with vision, by the way you look. So people feel touched. There's an energy field. You touch people from a distance. People send prayer.
Right.
I mean, we really do get affected. We're almost in this matrix where our energy is connected. Everyone's energy is interconnected, and we feel it. So the more you can understand about touch, it can be healing or it can be destructive if it's not understood. And if you want to be passionate and affectionate with someone and you go right past the energy field and just grab at them, it's not the same as slowly approaching and touching and being aware of how the person's tissue feels on their arm. Does it feel soft? Is it rejecting you? To really be sensitive to touch. It's a whole area by yourself. And there's a few more. And another thing that is really important is to understand healing. Like, how do you heal, and how does the other person heal? Like, if something happens that one of you feels hurt by, you might be a person who has to ask questions and find out and discuss it. The other person might need to go quietly by themselves, go away for a day, or do something different. And if you understand that, you give each other the space to do it your own way.
Right.
And you also help each other out. So healing is an important aspect. And then this is in a relationship, in an intimate relationship, sensuality, feeling with all of your senses, and enjoying your sexuality. But every one of us has our own sexual love map, and it's unique for each person. So intimacy is really, there's someone who spoke on my Sexual Reawakening Summit who did a whole study with lots of people about peak love and sexual experiences. And what she discovered is that for people to enter a peak sexual experience, it's like jumping off a cliff. They're being really vulnerable, and they're stepping into a place where they don't know if it's safe, they don't know if they're going to be accepted. So you need to create a relationship that feels really safe, and then you can explore as deeply as you are willing to explore. And that's intimacy. That's true intimacy. Mm-hmm. And then finally, there's the spiritual connection. You know, without that, you know, what is the meaning of life? It really makes a difference to find that connection to your higher self, to the universe, to a broader perspective than just your little situation in life and your little relationship and your little family, but to see yourself as part of the world and part of something even bigger. So that's how you create love, with a lot of awareness and understanding and acceptance.
That's a beautiful list of steps, and I love that you start with the self, because knowing ourselves, it's a one relationship we have every minute of our lives. It's never going away. And, you know, really provides that framework for how we relate to everyone. And, you know, I really honor that you're saying, you know, we have to deeply know the people that we're with to really love them. And it's because I think, you know, it's funny, I was watching this, I don't know if anybody's ever seen the show Transparent, but there's a scene in it where this husband and wife are having difficulty, and she's yelling, "Why do I have to explain to you how to love me?" And I think a lot of people don't realize we do need to share, you know, how is it that, you know, we relate to each other? How do we communicate, and how do we point out what's important to us? And that's really valuable conversation to have in intimate relationships and families, you know. So
and we also have to recognize how that other person is showing love. Some men will show love by fixing things for you, and they want you to be okay, and they take care of things, and instead of buying gifts. So if you're expecting gifts,
it can be that
someone
simple, right?
Comfortable with that, right? He might fix your car or fix your computer or whatever he's able to fix. You know, take care of things.
Yeah, we all have different languages, you know, as they say, and you know. And you know, another thing I thought as you were speaking is how little attention or conversation we've had in our world about touch, and how important attention and intention is when we touch each other. You know, very often, you know, the opportunity we have when we touch someone to actually really focus our love and energy and attention on them when we hug them or when we caress an arm or something has an entirely different sensory experience than if it's just a quick, unattended to kind of action, you know?
Well, they've done studies in the past, not recently, but they did studies. I remember one where a waitress who would touch a client would get a bigger tip just by gently touching a shoulder or something. And it also a study where a teacher who touched a student gently like that would the students would do much better in the class, you know. But we've become such a touch aversive society that you can get in trouble for touching. It's like somebody does negative things around touch and it becomes this negative thing all around, and it really isn't.
Right.
That's beautiful.
When it
connects us.
Exactly. We're all craving more connection, I think. And I'm sure it's a function to some degree of the really busy world we live in, that we, you know, I'm sure you've noticed, Dr. Erica, how much coaching everyone needs, even to look people in the eye, look strangers in the eye and be present when you're at the grocery store. And all these things contribute to our sense of connection and community in the places that we live. And it can start that small with that kind of a touch, just a visual touch.
And I've been in a lot of workshops where we look into each other's eyes. You have a partner and you look into each other's eyes for a long period of time. That is really difficult until you're able to stay present, because you really are being seen and you can't hide.
And you feel very vulnerable, right? Because sometimes we haven't even done that with ourselves. And here we're offering it to somebody, a stranger or somebody we just met. And I've experienced that to be, you know, really quite powerful to do, and to, you know, bring that home and do it with your family and your loved ones and your friends, and just, Just try to hold mm-hmm. that gaze a little bit longer to let people know I'm present with you. I'm really here.
That's the most important quality you can bring to a relationship, is to really be present with the person. Not bringing your past in and their past and all that other stuff. But right in the moment, I'm here.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing to feel, that someone is here with you.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but in a lot of the healing work I've been a recipient of or seen happen, just pure presence can be super healing. We don't always have to figure out why somebody felt a certain way or find a direct solution, but just being really present for somebody's pain can shift it, or being really present to express love can be enough to change things. And there's a saying that all attention is love, and I really believe that.
Mm-hmm. When you're trying to give advice and make suggestions and fix the problem, there's an underlying assumption that the other person is not capable of fixing the problem, that you know better than that person knows.
Right.
So it's so much more comforting when somebody doesn't try to fix your problem, unless you're asking them, unless you say, what should I do? That's different. But if you're just saying, I'm very upset about this situation, you really want someone to hear you, and maybe you can figure it out. Maybe to ask you some questions in a moment of being present to help you to figure it out, rather than tell you what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to circle back to what you said about sensuality and about enjoying our sexuality and finding our own unique love map. I think that is that statement alone is very powerful, because I think, I'll just share, like, as a woman and a mother and a businesswoman, like, there have been times in my life where that just got pushed down low on the ladder because I was fatigued mm-hmm. or too busy. And, you get to a point where you realize, This is a super important part of my life, and how do I bring it to the surface? How do I cultivate it? And how do I respect my own unique, I like how you call it the love map. How do you respect your own desires? And it's so self-loving to ask yourself what those are and to trust them and to allow yourself to experience what you're desiring. I don't think that's a common thing that we do necessarily.
And another important piece is that when you're in a relationship, especially living together and even more so married, there's a responsibility in terms of sexuality. If you're withholding sexual contact and affection from your partner, what is your partner supposed to do with that energy? The person feels desire, gets aroused. Where are they going to go if they have you as a partner? This has to be worked out.
Right, and being willing to go to... Oh, go ahead.
That just some way that you can work it out, because you may have different desire levels, but it's respecting each other, but it's also understanding that there is a responsibility when you're a couple together. And people very often get into relationships and marry without feeling that passion. So they have what they want. A woman has the child, and she's happy. I have my baby now, and the husband is feeling totally neglected. And it goes the other way also. Well, but I've just seen some of that, and it's painful.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we all don't know what we're getting into. I didn't realize for myself that I'd had sexual abuse until I was far into my marriage. And when I realized it and the memory started coming back, it was like a revelation that explained so many things in my experience with my husband. And I was fortunate enough that he was very supportive of doing healing work around it, so that, I mm-hmm. could open up and experience more than a very limited range of things. But I would actually love to... I understand from looking at your work that you are a proponent of somatic work, which is something I did to help, release trauma from the body from that kind of abuse. And I know that, it's all connected, how we feel about our sexuality, that the experience we have gets stored and the energy of our sexual experiences affects, you know, what's happening in the present moment too. And I didn't know if you wanted to comment on that.
Sure. That's the work that I do. It's based on a few different styles of the mind-body therapy, the Rubenfeld Synergy Method and craniosacral work and polarity therapy. Those were my main trainings, although I've also trained in Asian shiatsu and acupressure type of body work. So I have an understanding of the body and the body-mind connection. And when someone lies on the massage table, say they were talking about their relationship, and they say, I'm not really angry, you know, I don't really care. They lie on the table and let down as I'm helping that person's body relax and the tension, let go of that tension. Then the truth comes out because the body doesn't lie. And the tension spots, when you really go into it and explore it and find the meaning there, the answers come. So what has happened in the past, what you're not feeling good about right now in your life, and it's sometimes amazing. It's unexpected and amazing.
Yeah, and the body can really guide you through that healing process when you have a great facilitator and that knows this kind of work. And yeah, I just wanted to, you know, share my experience of it because it was really powerful to help release some of the, you know, the kind of, like I had painful experiences that, you know, through somatic work were released, and then I could have a better, you know, more pleasurable experience as a woman. And, you know, it's really beautiful to know those kind of therapies are out there for people that are often not even sure where to start, you know, with them.
And the other piece of that is getting that experience that you're not alone with this. That it's like a universal experience, that anyone who had that kind of trauma would have some reactions, maybe different from yours, but that sense of universality. And the other sense that really helped me in one of my sessions was the therapist said to me, this is temporary. So whatever I was feeling, I was in a deep state of maybe depression, and it was temporary. That really helped. Because it wasn't like my whole life and the rest of my life, and that I could do something about it and it could change.
Yeah, and it can be pretty intense sometimes. And I kind of had that fear too, like when I was going to get to the bottom of this. But, you know, being on the other side, it's not to say I never, ever feel anything related to that history, but it's not my frame of reference all the time. And you can really move into more joy and, you know, happy expression, you know, even having had that in the background.
Even if you do feel it again, you've expressed it already. Your husband knows it's open, it's out there. So it's not so shaming.
Yeah.
It's that shame when it's hidden, when you haven't told anyone about it and you're afraid that someone might find out. And that's the quality that we really need to heal in ourselves for everything. If you have a shame that, I don't know, I can't sing or I can't write or I'm not good in sports or whatever, and you feel ashamed, you never know how good you could be. Somebody way back when told you you're not good at that, so you got afraid to do it. But there are things you could try at any point and get a lot better and feel good about yourself. But it starts by expressing it and having a safe place to express it and being heard by somebody else. Another human being being a witness to you, that makes a huge difference too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can all, like, you can actually do that for yourself even, right? Just holding a place of love for the, you know, whether it's you or somebody else, if that comes up. I think you're right that the shame is what's debilitating more than anything else in the experience. I really appreciate
that. I think you can only do so much by yourself. Because you have a brain and it's wired a certain way and it gets into a circuit, you know, and keeps repeating. It's very hard to get out of that. And an outside person can come in and help to shift that energy.
Yeah, I totally agree that it's a lot easier and reaching out for help with those kind of things that are so deeply rooted are really the most wonderful places to bring that help in. I wanted to ask you a couple questions that we are sharing with everyone on the summit. And we're sort of already into the first one, which is, what would you say your prescription is to provide relief to the shame, doubt, or fear that comes up? And, you know, when you have clients working with that, how do you guide them?
Well, I just had a wonderful talk on my radio show with a lady who was a stunt gal for leading celebrities, and Lisa Loving Dalton. And she described a process that I really liked about just in the moment that you have this fear, to allow yourself to get into a state of ease. To feel, I can do this easily. So you're in traffic, you're stuck in traffic, and you say, okay, I can be in a state of ease. So just saying those words, that I can be in a state of ease, and you take a breath. Breathing is very important. Yeah. All of that gets you into the relaxation state instead of the fight or flight state. And that's what's so important, that when you have shame, you get into this, it's fight, flight, or freeze. And you get into a state of freeze when you have shame. You just want to close in on yourself. But if you can get into that state of relaxation through meditation, through there's something called holosync, which really works on your brain. You listen to these sounds with earphones on, and it just gets your brain functioning in a better way. So meditating, relaxing, even listening to soothing music can make a huge difference. Sorry about the phone. I just hung up. Anyway, listening to really soothing. I'm trying to hang it up, but
no worries.
It won't hang up. Okay.
We'll just live with it.
That's what I'm talking about, that starts talking. I'm going to have to walk out of the room.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't hang up that phone.
No problem. Yeah, Dr. Erica, okay. one of the things I find is just saying to myself, it's human to be fearful. It's okay that I'm feeling this. That helps more than saying, I wish I wasn't afraid, you know, or being upset that you're afraid.
That's
just makes it worse.
What I'm trying to say is, whatever you're facing, so I'm thinking if you're facing someone who's about to mug you, and then you say something to yourself, I can be relaxed. Just to say something like that, to calm yourself down so you don't get into a terrified state, because that will at least allow your brain to think of the best options.
Yeah,
you
know,
you
get
in any circumstance.
Fight or flight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's an excellent prescription for the fear. So let me ask you the next question, which we always have fun with, which is, you know, as somebody who knows about love and self-love, what is a treasured practice or something you do regularly that really shows yourself that you love yourself and cultivates that inside?
Well, one of the things that I used to do for years was go out to a restaurant, you know, and sit there and eat something nice. But I've been really changing the eating habits and eating so much more healthy. So all of a sudden, that is not so healing for myself. Because each time I eat out, there's something that's not so healthy on the meal. So it's not exactly that. But the other thing that I've always done that, is I go to my health club. And I love going there because I work out. First of all, that I feel good doing that. And I always work out at the level that my body is accepting. If it's too painful, if it's too much of a strain, I'm easy on myself. But then I go regularly. But what I love about my particular health club is that we have a jacuzzi and a sauna and a steam, special spa area. So no matter what's been going on in my life, when I get to the health club, I always feel good. It's just a space. And there are women there that I know for many years and will chat about nothing important, you know, or maybe just what's going on, but it's not about business. It's not serious about relationships. It's just easy chatting and very soothing. So that's my favorite thing to do. But also
I love that.
Swimming. I mean, I love physical activity, but it's also really good to get out in nature. because you forget when you're in your house or your apartment, you're not connected. And when you go out and just look at the birds, just look at them and watch them flying. Or even if you're on the web, look at all those beautiful images of animals. They have so many videos of dogs and different animals playing, jumping into something, and or babies. Watching that stuff is so calming and soothing. So when you really feel down and out, it's good to turn to one of those things. Physical activity is great, but I just read a study recently that if you're angry when you go to exercise, especially if you already have slightly high blood pressure, it could actually be dangerous. So
might want to bring it down instead of up.
right. Don't just jump into exercise. Maybe do some of the other things to calm down first.
Yeah, or maybe a brisk walk will work better than a run.
Right.
No, I hear what you're saying. And I think all that exposure to nature and animals connects us to our heart, which helps us to shift, you know, the experience we're having. And those are all beautiful practices. The final question that I had for you was, if you could only share one idea or one sentence with the world, could you boil it down into one thing, and what would you say?
I do. I came up with a statement. My father used to always say, where there's a will, there's a way. And I'm not so sure about that, because you can't always will your way to things, because other people around you have other perspectives and you can't force your will. So I changed that statement. And my favorite statement in the world is, where there is love, there is a way.
I really enjoy that.
And of course, it may not always be the way you expected it to be, but when you come from love and keep sharing your love, good things happen. The negative things drift away. The people that you don't resonate with, they somehow back away from you. And then you find the connection with the people that you really do feel that heart connection with.
I totally agree. Well, Dr. Erica, you have so much amazing work to share with people, and I wanted to just close with having you just sort of talk about your free offer, because it has so much in it. I don't think I could do it justice. your relationship healing toolbox is what I believe it's called, and it's got so many components. Maybe if you could take a second and share with people, that would be great.
Okay. I created this. It was a moment of inspiration when I wrote this relationship healing toolbox, because I gave terms to so many of the things that I teach and work with. And one of them is a choice calculator. Like, there are 9 items, 9 tools in this toolbox. And in other words, just the way you have a calculator for numbers, and we have a calendar to keep track of things, you really need your own choice calculator. And I interviewed someone who wrote a book called Only 2 Choices. And that adds to what I'm saying. So the choices are, in every moment, is this going toward my goal or is it going the other way? Is this what I really want? Is this going to help me? So if you're on a diet, is eating this food going to help me to lose that weight? Or if you meet a man and he's sexy and you want to sleep with him, and then you say, is sleeping with him going to get me to the place that I want to get to, if I want to get married and I want someone to love me? In this moment, is that going to lead me toward that? Or is my goal in the moment just to have fun and not to worry about the future? Well, okay, then that's your choice. So you need a choice calculator. So you know that, you know, in certain circumstances, I just want to have fun for today and just do this thing, eat this chocolate cake and enjoy it. But in other circumstances, I'm on a special diet. My choice needs to be, what's going to support me in that? Or else I'm just sabotaging myself all the time. So that's just one item. Another one, this is an important one, is your truth detector. And I like to give some of the facts with this. That your truth detector about a circumstance, you really like a man and you're attracted to him, but you get a sense in your gut that something's not right. So they have described your gut as the enteric nervous system or your second brain. And it has 500 million neurons in the gut. And this is 1/200th of the number of neurons of the brain, 5 times as many neurons as the spine.
Wow.
The spine only has 100 million neurons. So our gut has a lot of nerves, and those go up to our brain and send the messages back and forth. So we can't ignore what's going on in our gut. But it has a lot more. It also has 30 neurotransmitters. It has 90 to 95% of our body's serotonin, and it has 50% of our body's dopamine. Serotonin is the feel-good hormone, and dopamine is the one that we're excited by novelty, and it gets us excited about doing things and being passionate. So all those hormones and all those neurons are in our gut. So we need to pay attention to our gut, and in most circumstances. And then the other piece is our heart. Our heart has 5,000 times stronger magnetism than our brain. So when we connect through the heart, we are connecting. So that plus all the messages that our body gives, all these symptoms around our body and all these little injuries, like you injure your ankle. If you don't pay attention to it, you really need to find out why did that happen. Was it my posture or was it something about moving forward in life? So
when
you really understand the meaning of it. So that's why the truth detector is huge. And then another one is an emotional diffuser. And that's the kind of thing that you were talking about, you know, what is your practice for soothing yourself, for soothing your emotions, and for helping another person to soothe their emotions. So I have 9 of these really powerful tools in this toolbox. And if you master these, you're going to have wonderful relationships, not just with an intimate partner, but with all the people in your life, because you'll really be clear in the moment, clear about what you love and desire, what's good for you, what's not good for you, and, you know, how other people are feeling.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's a really amazing offer. We're so grateful that you put it together for this community, and just really encourage people to go check it out. And thank you for sharing so much beautiful wisdom on the call today and joining us and sharing your time.
Oh, it's been delightful. And thank you for sharing your own history and situations and understanding.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Erica. We'll look forward to having people click through and see the rest of your work. And thank you so much for your time today.
It's been delightful.